9:05, welcome back to the Chad Hastie Show on News Talk 790 KFYO, online KFYO.com. And of course, you can listen on the Radio Pup app. Just search for KFYO, and you can listen to KFYO programming all day long. In studio with me today, we continue our look at election 2014 primary races. Everyone's really getting after it right now because on Tuesday the 18th, that's when early voting starts, and a lot of people will be heading to the polls. And one of the more interesting races that we've been taking a look at locally would be the race between Representative Charles Perry and the challenger in that, Steve Massengill. And in studio with me right now, State Representative Charles Perry. Good morning.
Good morning, man. Thanks for having me, Chad. I hope everything's going well.
Well, I appreciate you coming in and talking to us a little bit about the campaign. As you've been traveling around, this is the area that you cover. That's in your area. It's a large area, isn't it?
It's a large area.
What are you hearing from the folks in that area?
You know, all the areas seem to be well received. You know, I've worked hard to work for them. There's been transportation issues and some economic development issues and some of those things in all those other counties. And what I figured out is the rural counties actually need me more. More than in Lubbock, and it's because Lubbock has personnel capital. They have resources. They have back end. So if there's a transportation issue, they can go to their staff. When Colorado City calls me and says, "Hey, I got this transportation problem," I become their back office. So it's right. Been good and it's been fun, and you know it's real rewarding to be able to get one of those calls and to find out 2 days later that you're able to get something done. It's been good.
One of the more pressing issues, I think, going forward, and you hear this from, I think, all the candidates, at least in different races, who are talking about this, water and energy going into the next legislative session and beyond. Are those some of the areas that you want to focus on going forward?
Yeah, I think you're going to see, number one, water's always going to be in the discussion, and I think you're going to see transportation be the water of the next session. I think that everybody left this last session thinking, we didn't quite finish up on some transportation initiatives. We've got a November 2014 vote coming up that's going to be a start of some of those transportation repairs or fixes. But I think transportation will be at the top of the headliner this time. Water, we're going to continue to look at Prop 6 and make sure those monies are going to where they were intended. And I will tell you, I had a really good meeting in Snyder the other day with multiple municipalities that are on the Colorado River Authority down there and some of the things. And here's what was encouraging. Best water discussion I've had in 4 years. They've actually got some plants working in the Big Springs area that is being able to desalinate the brackish water, but the technology they were talking about in that meeting, they can desalinate seabed water, which is almost unthought of, and they've got the cost of that somewhere around the $4 per thousand, and that technology is going to bring that down now. Think about that. We've got seabeds all underneath us out in this region, especially over in the Permian Basin area, that if they truly get that down in that $2 to $3 range where municipalities can actually function a million gallon a day need or something on an economical basis, our water needs are beginning to be developed. And I like to think Prop 6 is beginning to spur some of that activity and thoughts that, hey, maybe there's a funding mechanism where we can leverage to start those discussions. So you're going to see transportation, water, HB5. Still phenomenal piece of legislation, but now that we've started the process, we've got to make sure that it's enacted as intended, i.e., if we've got career tech available, do we have instructors? And if not, do we go to the private sector that can provide those instructors? Do we do a combination of? Do we build correct centers on a regional basis and not a campus-by-campus basis? So lots of those discussions are going to be had on HB5. So we're kind of coming back into the session of picking up where we left off, but in a very positive way. Mm-hmm. We started some really good things, and we just need to kind of follow through.
You know, one of the things that I think you and a lot of your other colleagues are always focusing on also would be federal overreach coming into the state. Senator Ted Cruz yesterday, you know, a big topic was gay marriage. You see that there are, what, 3 lawsuits in the state of Texas challenging the ban on gay marriage in the state of Texas. Do you think that's going to be an issue going into?
It's already an issue, and I'm afraid that a lot of that issue is going to be resolved before we even get back, and that's not going to be right. They're going to have some court cases going to really begin to tie our hands. But, you know, we have a constitutional amendment, one that we should stick by. It is a state's rights issue. Forget the issue that it's about. It is a state rights issue. You should allow states to have that. And I hate the fact that we're losing Greg Abbott as an attorney general. I hope the next one is as effective and as good as he was, because one thing you can say about General Abbott is he understood state sovereignty and federal roles and state roles, and he was an advocate for the Texas sovereignty every day in his office. So I hope the next guy is just as passionate and just as effective as he is, and this is going to be the issue of the day in the next session regarding, I think, federal overreach.
You think so?
I do. I really think it will. You'll continue to have the EPAs and the Department of Interiors and the Clean Water Act and all of those activists and the listing. I think the Prairie Chicken's a foregone conclusion almost, unfortunately. But we need to continue to fight it. We can't give up and walk away from it.
And I'm sure keeping an eye on voter ID, everything else that goes along with that.
Yeah, and I think the courts are on our side on that one ultimately. I think we did the right law. I think it's been upheld at multiple levels. And I think we'll win that one. It just makes sense.
One of the issues, or I guess the issue, that your opponent has had with you and with other state lawmakers is over education. And he and his supporters keep on repeating the same line that you cut $5.4 billion from the education fund. Talk to us a little bit about that, because there are people who I think they need to know exactly what happened, how that process broke down, and how 5.4 really wasn't cut.
Right. Well, the state Texas budget is driven by economy. And as the economy produces revenue, that's the revenue we have to appropriate. If there's no revenue, then there's no appropriation. If there's revenue, we appropriate. 2011, we were still in the deep recession. We're still in the bottom of it. We thought we'd be out of it in 2009. See, 2009, the federal government sent $15 billion to the state of Texas through stimulus dollars to bridge a gap that existed then. 11, we came in, no $15 billion in stimulus dollars. The hole was not filled, so at that point, the tough decisions had to be made. So when the economy doesn't produce $15 billion, you've got to find $15 billion, and you do it by, I don't have it to appropriate, so therefore it's not there. So we didn't have the money to appropriate. What we had, we did appropriate. And not only that, we used $3.1 billion from the rainy day fund just to pay the state's bills from July to August of that fiscal year. So people that argue we ought to drain the rainy day fund, there's a good example, is we were glad we had $3.1 billion in the rainy day fund available just to finish the fiscal year that year. The state would have been bouncing checks. Mm-hmm. The last hurricane we had was a $3 billion hurricane. So to operate on a non or a very small rainy day is not good. But the going back to 11, we did make those appropriations, which were shorter than what we'd liked, but that's what the economy produces. And that's why Texas came out of the recession faster. That's why Texas has always been solid as far as a bond rating goes. It all ties together. So there wasn't a cut. There just wasn't any money to give.
And there was money, but the funding actually did increase, didn't it?
The actual funding dollars, the dollars that were put in the system were more dollars than what they were in the previous session for education. The difference was, we are on a growth curve. The biggest thing that challenge we have in Texas will be a population growth that we continue to have. The best thing will be a population growth. 160,000 kids hit the school systems each biennium. Mm-hmm. That first session, the session of 2011, we were not able to fund the growth at the dollar amount that had been funded in previous. But also remember what they were told in 2009. $6 billion of the stimulus money went to education, and they were told, do not figure this into the baseline. Mm-hmm. This is a patch. This is something that's getting us over the hump, and hopefully we'll be better in 11. Well, we weren't. And everybody put that into the baseline as if it was permanent, and that's why it was even harder on the public school system when that was done. And that means the local people counted it as permanent revenue going forward, and it just wasn't.
And money was added back in this past session.
Right.
Is there a dollar figure? Because something you hear from educators and those who are in this process say, we need to add more money. We need to have more money into the educational system. Is there a dollar figure that has ever been mentioned, or a way to figure out exactly how to fund education and how much to fund education to where it's going to solve everything?
There's never been a dollar number quoted as to this is the number. Man, if we could just get to this number, everybody would be good. Arguably, everybody agrees, I think, that the distribution of the funding is broke and does need to be revisited and shouldn't have ever been where it's at today. In 2006, the current funding formula was a temporary fix. They never came back and fixed it. Now, I will tell you, because of the budget problems in 11, we tweaked the formulas for public education. And in that process, it is beginning to bring equity to it, and probably for the first time in the history of the formula since 06, equity is almost becoming a reality by getting rid of Hold Harmless and Target Revenue. 2017, that formula expires, and I think what you're going to have the Supreme Court do when this gets out of the process it's currently in, it will look at that formula that's currently in process and determine that it's probably on its way to bringing equity into that formula funding and may not require a whole lot of work on it, I hope, because it is bringing equity. Lubbock ISD is a good example. It got more money under the current tweaked of the formula that we've used than it would have had prior to the problems that we had in 11, and it's because of that target and Hold Harmless. Interesting enough, a lot of the poor districts are moving to rich districts because mm-hmm. of oil and gas
right.
and wind and all the energy sector. So you've got this dynamics now where they were on one side of the fence arguing for property or rich or property poor. Now they're on the flip side and they're not too excited about death.
Right.
So it's, you know, but what a nice problem to have.
Yeah.
You're having more property poor go to property rich. So it's been an interesting dynamic. It will be, I honestly think we will leave next session with a formula that funds equitable distribution of funds. I think it's rose to that level. I think the court's going to give you some encouragement to do that. So I'm looking forward to that discussion, but it's not easy. You start changing the form as somebody loses.
Right.
And that's not good.
9:16, we'll go ahead. We'll take the break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with State Representative Charles Perry. We have one more segment. We'll be right back. Back on the Chad Hastie Show, News Talk 790 KFYO, visiting with State Representative Charles Perry, running for re-election in District 83. You can visit his website, electcharlesperry.com. And we've brought this up a couple of times, whether it comes to school choice. And on the last show, last time you appeared on the show, you brought up this idea of really allowing the entire state to do what we have out here in West Texas in the Lubbock area, which is school transfer, where you can go if you want to leave Lubbock ISD, go to Lubbock Cooper, you can do that. And is that something that you want to pursue?
Yeah, you know, I was too naive because it works well out here where kids have choices, parents have choices, and they just move within district boundaries out here all day long, uninhibited, as long as there's capacity. You know, I don't want to move a kid into or force a district to take a kiddo into class if there's no classroom space.
Sure.
Assuming that barrier. So I just assumed that was happening all around the state. Well, come to find out, we're an exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. So what I think for the voucher debate that's going on, another school choice debate, one solution that leaves the public money intact and will provide competition within districts, if you make that a forced or a requirement that if a kid's requesting a transfer, and as long as there's capacity, there's some issues there regarding disciplinary problems. You don't want to transfer kids in with disciplinary, but you could even have a probationary look to where if that kid comes in and acts up, then we've got a different place for them. We won't send them back to either one.
Right.
We just need to, and that starts kind of filtering that out. But if you have that transfer requirement in place, then it does breed competition between the districts in the public school system, and that's what we're looking for, the best opportunity for kids to succeed. And as soon as those transfers start happening to one particular district, that's going to look at that other district and say, hey, we got to make some changes here. We got to do some things differently. So it's an option that works like the voucher in the sense that it promotes competition. It doesn't undermine the current public education. And then if private sector, you know, they're arguing we can do a better job maybe, well, then they're going to be able to pick winners and losers, if you will, with their funding. If they want to get behind a particular program that they think is well, then that's an option that's going to open up. But I thought everybody had that, but mm-hmm. I found out that this is unique to our area, and I think it's good for our districts to compete amongst each other.
Yeah, and there are some other areas of the state where it's starting to open up a little bit like it is here, but you know, back when I was in school in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, you're stuck. Yeah. Unless you move, you know, your parents are divorced, you go and live with another one, you're stuck in one district.
Right, and that's where the school choice issue is more relevant,
right?
Because you do have kids locked into bad districts or weak districts or poor districts, and that's not right. That's not fair. It's not fair to any of the people. So I'm going to pursue this a little bit more, and I think this is where I think we can make make some advances and gain some momentum with it, because it's common sense. It's what makes sense, you know. Mm-hmm. It just, to me, it just looked for the common sense approach.
Something that was not really relevant in the last legislative session, or at least it wasn't brought up, was immigration issues. And yeah, you hear Greg Abbott right now, he's talking about immigration. You hear the lieutenant governor candidates, they're talking about immigration. Maybe it'll make a reappearance. These are campaigns talking, yeah, of course, but maybe it'll come back up in the next legislative session. What role do you think the legislature has when it comes to immigration and border issues?
Well, I do agree with several of the campaign rhetorics that are out there, that it's a Washington problem, or it's a Washington issue, but a Texas problem, being on the border for about a week over three different times and seeing the impact of the commerce down there, seeing the killings of the drug cartel, 12 bodies in the river that week that I was down and in and out of that with drug cartel hits. It's real. It's worse than anybody can imagine. It's worse than what's going on that anybody would want to imagine. And it is impeding into our Texas borders further and further and further. Ranchers, the Royal movie that was done recently with all the, there wasn't anything in there that was not factual. It's happening daily. So I think you'll continue to see Texas spend more and more of its state budget just as a defense mechanism. Also recognize we ought to be sending that bill to the federal. I believe the only way that you stop it, and you got to separate the immigration issue between drug cartel and those that are coming in for other reasons, because they're not the same group.
Right.
Now they're unfortunately looped. So I'm talking about the drug cartel activity. We got to have some military action. We will spend $1 trillion to help the oppressed around the world, but we've let our southernmost business community and partner and people that trade with us on a really regular basis before all this got started, we let that go. And now those people have no options but to try to come here to work and do things. So we got to fix their side with federal military action. That's the only way you're going to be able to combat that. So our state budget's going to continue to spend more resources. I think we're spending about $230 million on a biennial basis on border security issues. That's a large chunk of money. I think that's what it was allocated up to. So it's always going to be that issue. As far as how to handle it, you shut the border down. You begin to know who's coming in. You expand the work programs.
Mm-hmm.
There's a vital need, and they fill a need, but you know who's in. You know what the work program is, and then you get, you know, you hold to that. You got to have a work program that makes sense. And then those that are here or not, there's a rule of law. And, you know, as harsh as that sounds, all we have is civil society is the rule of law. And when we bend or ignore or don't comply and turn our heads, then we create chaos.
Visiting with State Representative Charles Perry. If you have a question, we have just a couple of minutes left, but we can still probably get your question in at 770-5790, toll free 1-800-687-0790. You take a look at your past record, and again, I know you've come on the show and you've said you're very, very proud of your record, that you've accomplished a lot, that you started campaigning for a couple of years ago. What are some other areas that, since you've tackled those areas, that you're looking to expand on personally?
It's kind of some areas I've already started working on, but I have always said it, and I'm still committed to it. $200 billion budget. $74 billion is going to hiring public ed. $74 billion is going into Health and Human Services. Health and Human Services is growing at an exponential growth pattern that will consume and absorb our Texas budget in the next 30 years. If we do not figure out today how to deliver and how to provide the safety net in a more effective and efficient way, there will be no discussion about funding for education or public safety or corrections and those issues. This is a out of control cost, and it's one that we don't have a delivery system that works. I will tell you, there are actually viable ways to change that system with some federal waivers. And if there's one thing Obamacare has done, is it got a court ruling that took one of the scare tactics away, that they would withhold current funding if we didn't comply. We need to be in heavy negotiations of revamping how our entitlement and safety net program works in this state while the wind of opportunity is there, because they're looking to Texas to come on board at some level. We design our block grant. We design our eligibility. We design an entitlement program that works and tell them that's what we need. We may have some room to leverage and negotiate here. We have to begin that discussion and fix it. We got to fix it. So I'm going to continue to work on that. I think that's the 20-year look that we need to be looking at today.
State Representative Charles Perry, running for re-election, District 83. As always, appreciate your time today.
No, thank you.